In a moment, Michael Tellinger joins us. Slave Species of the Gods, a great researcher. We're going to talk about vanished civilizations, fossils, reptilians, and so much more as we go live down to South Africa in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Michael Tellinger back with us, a scientist in the true sense of the word, never shying away from controversial issues and scrutinizing every clue meticulously. After a 30-year-long obsession with the origins of humankind and genetic anomalies of our species, he wrote Slave Species of God. And then when Johann Heine exposed the mystery of the stone ruins of South Africa to Michael back in 2007, they began a process of research that led Michael to some startling scientific conclusions. Michael is also the founder of the UBUNTU, Ubuntu Liberation Movement. Michael, welcome back. How are you, sir?
Excellent, George. Nice to hear your voice and good to be talking to you. Are you working from home?
I am working from the cave in St. Louis, which is pretty darn close, I'll tell you that. I left Los Angeles a couple weeks ago.
Well, a good morning to you from sunny South Africa. We've been on lockdown now for, I think, since the 20th of March, I think, around there, until the end of April.
Are people panicking?
I beg your pardon?
Are people panicking? Is there hysteria out there?
Not really. You know, I go to town every second or third day to get some milk and fresh drinking water because our tap water is not that good at the moment. But there's calmness and there doesn't seem to be much hysteria or panic in our little town. I'm far away from the big cities, so I'm not sure what's going on in the cities. I know that apparently in Johannesburg, just around the time of the lockdown, people went crazy and the shops were just emptied out of everything, all the big supermarkets. But I think people have realized that everything is like actually okay. There's no need to panic.
Yeah, as the days go by, Michael, it's becoming more and more evident, I believe, that this was concocted in a lab. Probably got out accidentally, stupidly, but that this thing was made. It wasn't done by Mother Nature. What are you hearing out that way with that?
Yeah, pretty much the same kind of feedback that you just mentioned. This is more and more as we hear politicians talk about it and the arguments that start to sound more like children arguing. It sounds more and more like many of the false flag events we've seen of the past. I'm not saying that, you know, let's make sure that people don't misunderstand me. Yes, people are dying. It is tragic. It is horrific what's going on. But that doesn't mean that it's accidental in its nature playing a trick on us. It's actually mischievous and devious humans that have played a trick on us like they have many times before to keep humanity divided, to keep people in conflict so that they can keep their control over the planet.
Michael, tell us, how many books do you have out now?
Well, it's still the same. You know, I feel quite embarrassed. I haven't written anything since I released Ubuntu Contributionism, A Blueprint for Human Prosperity, Exposing the Banking Fraud in 2014. I keep saying I'm going to write another book this year, but I've been so busy with the research into the ancient ruins here and since the discovery of the fossils, plus my museum that I'm working on. And then I've been traveling a lot, as you know. I see you in the USA every year at Contact in the Desert. And then for 10 years now, I've been doing a tour of the USA. So this is the first time in 10 years that I've not gone to the USA.
And
I've not really sat down and written another book. There should probably be another 4 books out there. But I have put out a lot of videos on YouTube and on my TV channel, on my video channel, on my website for people that are interested in that, you know, they can go to my website and join my video channel. That's really where I'm putting all my effort in. Instead of writing a book, I'm finding it a lot quicker to share information in the form of video and transferring that information in that way. But at some stage, I will have to write a book so that it's in printed format as well.
Well, you've been a great guest on our program. You've been a great guest on our television show, Beyond Belief, and it's always fun catching up with you. We're going to miss you. No contact this year because of the coronavirus, but I'm sure we'll get together next year, Michael, hot and heavy in this great country of ours, things start working out. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things you've been working on. And tell us about the stone circles, first of all. Explain that to people who are brand new to the show.
Right. So everybody is aware of the fact that every year, every month, new discoveries are made around the world regarding ancient civilizations, and new ruins are being discovered and new fossils found everywhere, and bones of giants, and just amazing things found around the world, underwater, up the mountains, and in the most remote areas, and sometimes in the most built-up areas of the cities of Europe, underground, where they discover ancient ruins and civilizations that they did not know about, showing that civilizations build on top of each other and then forget what was there before they arrived. So it's just this ongoing revelation of how little we know about our human history. In essence, that's probably the primary takeout that we get from these ongoing discoveries, that we got no bloody clue what was going on in the world in ancient times. And these discoveries are made, and people marvel around the world, and they keep making more and more documentaries about this. And it's truly astonishing to see how much ancient vanished civilizations there are. And that's exactly what happened here in South Africa. By accident, and again, most of these discoveries don't happen by design or premeditated. We're going to go to the jungle and find something. These discoveries, most often than not, or more often than not, happen by accident. And that's what happened here in South Africa and Southern Africa. When I say that, I'm talking predominantly about South Africa. And for people that listen to your show, hopefully they know that South Africa is a country. It's not just a region in Southern Africa. There's the country of South Africa, and then Zimbabwe, our neighbor to the north of us, Botswana, which is also to the northwest of us, and little parts of Mozambique, and obviously Namibia, which is extreme northwest of us. So it's South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, those five countries. And the story with these stone circles and the discovery of these stone circles really go back 500 years ago, when the Portuguese first, the Europeans that came past the Cape of Good Hope, before it became Cape Town, and when they came on land from various parts of Southern Africa, especially on the eastern coast of South Africa, and then what is now known as Mozambique, just to our east of us. When they discovered these ancient ruins and structures, and also in the early 1500s when the Portuguese arrived at Great Zimbabwe, and they started to marvel and wondered, what are these stone structures about? What are these ruins about? Who built them? And they made records. So the first written record of the ancient ruins of Southern Africa go back 500 years, and that's spectacular. And then we forget about it, and they just vanish. And until the late 1800s, when the next wave of Europeans arrived and rediscovered Great Zimbabwe, and then started to explore Great Zimbabwe, excavate Great Zimbabwe, which is in a town of Masvingo in southeast Zimbabwe. We go there at least once a year, taking our tour groups there. And for people that are interested in this, you know, might as well tell you now that we do at least one big tour a year, sometimes two tours a year, to all these ancient ruins, including Great Zimbabwe. And it's a spectacular tour that once you take it, it changes your life and your perspective on the world and the history of our world. So back to the Portuguese. And then the Europeans arrived from Europe, and Karl Mauch was the first European, then since then a German explorer, that stumbled upon Great Zimbabwe around the 1860s, I believe. And then we see this whole stampede of the aristocrats, the European aristocrats, the so-called explorers that were really just thieves and plunderers, who would send their so-called exploring parties with some archaeologists, but mostly it was a plundering expedition that went and just plundered these ancient sites and took whatever they could of value and removed it to Europe. And that's unfortunately what has happened to much of the ancient ruins of Southern Africa. And then in the late 1800s, 1891, most of the research that we actually find that has remained really critical came from a British archaeologist called Theodore Bent. He was the first guy to explore and excavate Great Zimbabwe and many of the other ruins of South Africa and Zimbabwe. And it was Theodore Bent who, in 1891, already stated that he estimated there were about 4,000 of these strange ruined walls, these stone, circular stone structures. And they became known as the ruins or the stone circles of South Africa and Southern Africa. In fact, I think it was probably myself and Jan Heiner in the early 2000s that started calling them the stone circles of Southern Africa.
And they're about, 75,000 years old, Michael?
Well, it's actually a lot older than that.
And this oh, my God.
Really interesting. No, it's much older than that. And like I keep saying, George, is you have to just constantly be prepared to shift your what you know. Have an open mind at all times so that when you find new information, new evidence and new discoveries, then you change what you thought before. We can't sit in a box and put up the walls and believe in a statement that we made 10 years ago that is now completely outdated with new knowledge and new scientific knowledge and technology and research. So the reason for people that are familiar with my book, Adam's Calendar, and that's also one of the main reasons why I have to write a new book. However, a lot of this information is in many videos on YouTube and on my channel. So please follow that until I release a new book. But it's a lot quicker to get the information out there with a recording like this, an interview that we're doing now, to millions of people than it is to write a book. So I think books in many ways are becoming slightly, they're still important, but it's a longer way of getting the information out to people. However, you can put it in much more detail in the books. But so when we first started to explore Adam's Calendar in 2007 with Jan Heiner, keep in mind that he discovered it by accident, or shall I say,
kind of stumbled into it.
Stumbled into it when one of his pilots crash landed his light aircraft close by and had to spend the night with his plane suspended, hanging in the trees on the edge of a cliff.
Wow!
So that was a story. It's one of these light aircraft. They call them spotter aircraft. It's a light aircraft that flies around and they're looking for forest fires. If they see smoke rising somewhere, they can notify the office, and then the helicopters that control the forest fires take off and they go take care of the forest fire. And one of these guys was coming into land because Jan Heiner runs the biggest forestry firefighting company in Southern Africa. In fact, one of the biggest ones in the world, believe it or not. He actually does work in the rest of Africa, in Canada, in Australia. So it's a huge international company that fights forestry fires. And so this guy was coming into land and ran out of fuel. And he tried to make an emergency landing on the top of the mountain there. And he didn't see the sides of the hill on top of the mountain that was quite steep. And then that side that sloped towards the edge of the cliff moved the plane, the light aircraft, towards the edge of the cliff out of control. And he went right over the edge. Luckily, the aeroplane is very light. So it got caught in this very thick bush that's growing on the side of the mountain cliff. It's a steep 300-meter drop. It's a 900-foot drop down there.
Well, he was lucky.
He was very lucky. He broke his arm, and he spent the night. He climbed out of the airplane and spent the night on the edge of the cliff. It was bloody cold. He was lucky to have survived. And then in the morning, they came looking for him, and they spotted him there, and then obviously sent out the rescue team. But it's at that time that Johan saw this arrangement of rocks on the edge of the cliff there, right next to where the plane was. And then the same day he came back, because he was so intrigued by this, he knew that it was something much more than just a loose arrangement of stones. And so it was Johan that accidentally stumbled upon, which has now become one of the most important ancient archaeological sites linked to the origins of humankind, the activity of the Anunnaki in Southern Africa, the creation of the human race, the cloning of a new species.
Now, is this the Zechariah Sitchin Anunnaki? Same type of story?
That's the same story. So
oh, boy. All
what
right.
in essence happens here in South Africa and Zimbabwe is what Sitchin did not know about. Sitchin knew about Great Zimbabwe, but he did not know about the stone circles. He did not know about Adam's calendar. He did not know about the technology encoded in the stone circles and the tools and artifacts that lie scattered among the stone circles that I've discovered in 2008 and been researching.
No, what do you mean? What do you mean tools? How old are the tools, Michael?
Well, it all dates back to about 300,000 years.
Oh,
and
my
that's
God.
Where I was leading to, that's where I was leading to, George, is when we first discovered Adam's calendar, and I took a long way around to get back to the point. When Johan and I started working on Adam's calendar in 2007, after he had already been researching it for 3 to 4 years on his own and nobody was listening to him, I was the first person to take cognizance of what he was doing. And then within a year, I wrote the book highlighting how he discovered it and the importance of the site. At that stage, the reason we said it was about 75,000 years old was based on archaeoastronomy. We had about three archaeoastronomers look at the site, and two of them were prepared to give us a date of what they thought the age of the calendar was based on archaeoastronomy. And the first one was 75,000 years, and the next one was much closer to what the truth is most likely, and that's the second one went 260,000 years.
Astounding.
But that was after I already published the book. So the book originally says 75,000 years ago.
So and that's how we got that year. That's how we got that number.
Yes, that's how people still refer to the 75,000 years ago. But since then, we've had much more research done, not just archaeoastronomy, but other scientific research, you know, geology, erosion, tectonic plate movements, what happened at the Barberton Crater. The Barberton Crater is right next to it, and the Barberton Crater is one of the oldest anomalies on Earth. The geologists from all over the world come here. It's one of the most important geological sites in the world for geologists. They always hear from all the countries. The USA is very visible here. That goes back to 3.2 billion years. Some of the oldest rock formations on Earth lie right next to Adam's calendar. And look, I can go. That's a discussion that we can have in a completely separate interview, because once you start talking about that and what the Barberton Crater is actually all about, becomes a very mysterious topic, because it's not what people think. In fact, I can tell you right now that the reason why the Anunnaki built the Adam's calendar there, or the calendar, which is a very powerful machine, it's most likely a portal, a multidimensional portal. It's a machine that's completely broken down, like all the other ancient sites and what we call temples and pyramids, all machines. You know this by now. Many of your listeners mm-hmm. will be aware of that. None of these are places of worship or burial sites, or none of that.
No,
crap.
There was something. A portal to what, though, Michael?
A portal to transport, a teleportation device.
Wow.
It's literally a teleportation device, like the Beam Me Up Scotty in Star Trek. That's
okay.
What you're looking
All right.
At.
And maybe that's how the Anunnaki got to this planet.
Exactly. And most likely, that's where they were removing the gold. Now we've jumped quite a bit. I've said a few things.
Well, we're going to take a break, so this is perfect timing. We're going to take a break. We'll come back, and I want you to kind of tell us about the Zechariah Sitchin theory of the Anunnaki, the mining for gold, what they wanted. We'll get into that, and that ties into your work of what this device, these ruins might be, a portal to another world. That's fascinating. And these tools that you said were left behind, I want to get into that too. Michael Tellinger with us. He's live in South Africa. A couple of his other books include Adam's Calendar, which we're talking about tonight, Temples of the African Gods. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're back with Michael Tellinger. Michael, before we get into the work of Zechariah Sitchin, is Adam's calendar and the Stone Circle ruins the same or two different places?
Oh, no, it's all part of the giant grid. So if people can just imagine, the stone circles aren't just a few stone circles thrown together in one area. We're talking about the entire southern African continent is covered by these structures.
My gosh,
we're talking
okay.
About 450,000 square kilometers. You know, it's the size of an entire country.
Oh my God, it's huge.
States in the USA. You know, it's like the size of Oregon, or a bit larger, probably larger than that. It covers probably half of South Africa and most of Zimbabwe, and into parts of Botswana and Mozambique, and across the Zambezi River, which is the northern border of Zimbabwe, into Zambia. This is vast. This is why people can't appreciate it until they actually come here. Until they come here on one of the tours that I do and drive around. We drive from South Africa across the border into Zimbabwe, and they see the ongoing extent of this. It boggles your mind.
How long is the drive? How long is the drive, Michael?
Well, it's
a couple hours.
It's a one-day drive.
A one-day, okay.
Yeah, it all depends. If you fly in or from South Africa into Bulawayo, we normally either drive across the border, across the Limpopo River, and then head another 300 kilometers or so southeast Zimbabwe to Masvingo, where Great Zimbabwe is, or we fly into Bulawayo from Johannesburg. Which is easier, but then you have to drive. Then you can go and see the Kami ruins in Bulawayo, which is spectacular. All part of this whole stone circle stuff everywhere. And then it's a five-hour drive from there to Masvingo. You're going from west, southwest Zimbabwe to southeast Zimbabwe. We do it in various ways, but each journey it's a very unique experience.
How much excavation was required, or were they just popped up, standing up almost?
Well, Great Zimbabwe was the first big one in southern Africa that was excavated from the late 1800s by Karl Mauch and then others that came after him. And that's when they took out all the important stuff was taken out, removed, like, for example, the lintel. There was a lintel above an entrance that was into the main enclosure of Great Zimbabwe. The Portuguese came across that. The problem with that is that lintel had a written script on it, a written language. And at the time, none of the African tribes that lived in that area had a written language. So whoever built it was from a different period or different group of beings that had some sort of written language. The problem with that is that the Portuguese took that and they tried to have it deciphered, and they could not decipher it. So the script from the lintel at Great Zimbabwe remains an undeciphered ancient script. The mystery here is just spectacular. Just to come back to the question, is Adam's calendar part of the Stone Circles? So the stone circles cover the entire southern Africa. And Adam's calendar is like the centerpiece. It's like the flagship of the stone circle.
And that's the portal, you think?
That's the portal. And the reason why it's there is now we have to do a big jump and a big leap. So what is this all about? What are the stone circles all about? Okay, firstly, they're not dwellings for people or animals. Okay, you got to dispel that immediately. And we can talk a lot more about that. The stone circles are unquestionably machines. It's not just machines, it's one giant machine. Because all the stone circles, every single one that we've explored and researched, generates very high sound frequencies and electromagnetic fields, and they share those frequencies and the electromagnetic fields with all the other stone circles around them. So they're all connected to each other with what I've been calling channels. These channels are like, if you can imagine, it looks like a pathway. If you look on the aerial photographs in my book, on my website, on my videos, and by the way, my video channel has just recently uploaded many hours of aerial drone footage, first time ever seen from the air.
Oh, I bet that's fantastic.
Incredible expanse. Oh my God, George, when you see this, even for me, who's been working with this for 12 years now, I'm here every day, and even for me, when I finally learned how to fly my drone and I started to film this was now in January 2020, that's how recent this is, I started to fly my drone and take the videotape aerial footage of the areas that I believe are important because I know this better than anyone else. My jaw nearly dropped when I started to see and recognize new things, and we need to get into that. It's from the aerial footage that you realize how complex and how incredible this engineering feat is. It's an achievement of unimaginable proportion.
Had it not ever been... Michael, had it not ever been photographed from above before?
It has. It's been photographed, but no video footage. No moving video footage, so you can really appreciate the expanse.
Amazing.
And it is actually, so let me throw this in there for you. This is the latest research. Nothing is more recent than this. It's only in February. So after analyzing the aerial footage for about a month, it suddenly hit me that February 2020, that the rivers and the streams that we find coming down the mountains in between the Stone Circle ruins, the entire huge grid that covers entire mountains, think of a spider's web and put that onto a mountain, you know, with circles and channels and that connect them to each other, and also the terraces. That's the other big thing. The agricultural terraces that are like the mesh, the net. It's almost like in science, I guess you would call it the ether that holds it
right.
All together. Are the terraces, the agricultural terraces. And what I only realize now is that the rivers and streams that come down the mountains are younger than the Stone Circle ruins themselves. Because it's only when you study it by looking at the aerial video footage and not still photographs, because you don't really can't see it in the stills. It's in the moving aerial video footage that you realize that many of the stone walls, the terraces, the channels have been broken by the rivers and streams and destroyed the walls and terraces, which means that the terraces and the stone circles and the ruins were there before the rivers and streams had formed. This is breaking news. This is spectacular. So there can be very little argument about the age of these structures. And I've been talking about this for a long time now, since at least 2010, that these structures are most likely some of the oldest structures on Earth. It's most likely the Anunnaki that built them. It could be other beings as well. It's difficult to say, but definitely the Anunnaki had a big role in this. There's no doubt in my mind. And again, I have a lot of scientific, metaphysical, and spiritual information. And I use all of the above. I don't just separate the things. The Anunnaki were here and they were mining gold. But the big question is, the size and the expanse of this is so huge, we can't imagine building that today.
No.
It's just impossible.
No, we couldn't.
There's not enough money in the world to put together a construction site like this.
Let's talk about the theory for a moment of Zechariah Sitchin, Michael, to put it in perspective, and how important that is to your discovery of these ruins.
Yes.
Zechariah Sitchin, go ahead.
Now, in essence, what this discovery does, it gives credibility and credence. It provides the physical evidence for much of what Zechariah Sitchin spoke about and wrote about. Now, I've got to say right up front here, I don't necessarily agree with everything that Sitchin wrote, not because he was trying to fool us or not because he was trying to mislead us, because of misinterpretation of the text that he was translating. If he had the knowledge that we have today regarding the ruins and the stone circles and Anunnaki activity and the evidence of the gold mining and so much more information, if he had that information, he would have probably reached different conclusions and different interpretations of his translations of some of the Sumerian texts, referring to the Abzu, referring to the gold mining, referring to the Anunnaki activity here in southern Africa, which many believe, including me, is often referred to as the Abzu, or the land below the equator.
Now, Zechariah, of course, said that the Anunnaki came here from a planet called Nibiru, which is in a 3,600-year elliptical orbit, and they came here to mine gold. But tell us why they needed it.
Yeah. Look, that is the big question and the big mystery and the big argument, I guess. Also, it creates a big argument as to about the planet Nibiru. I know that Anton Parks, the brilliant French researcher, states that he has not found any evidence of a planet or mention of Nibiru in the Sumerian translations that he's done, and he is the new kid on the block. You know, he's brilliant. His knowledge of the Sumerian texts, from my research, far surpasses anybody else that has come before or alive today. His ability to translate and read the Sumerian text is unmatched. And for people that don't know Anton Parks, I highly recommend to take your Zachariah Sitchin knowledge or any other Sumerian translations to a whole nother level. Get Anton Parks' books if you can. And I wish I could get Anton Parks here to South Africa. I need to reach out to him, because I think once he sees what's going on here, he might also readjust some of his thinking, whatever that may be. Or it might add greatly to what he already knows. Don't have to readjust your thinking. It just adds a lot of information that will expand your existing knowledge. But Zachariah Sitchin's work is critical, because he woke millions and millions of people up. Even if 10% of what he told us is true, it doesn't matter.
Right.
He was responsible for waking up people like me, possibly people like you, and millions of people around the world to think differently about our human origins and start to take seriously what we read in our mythology books and what previously has been shoved down our throats by mainstream media and mainstream archaeology and mainstream history and mainstream education, which is all a bunch of crap, as we know by now, just really set up by the modern banking families over the last 150 years to create a future obedient labor force. That's the only reason for the current education system, not to give us knowledge and wisdom, is to create a future obedient labor force. And that's what the Ubuntu movement and the one small town strategy deals with on a very separate platform. But it's connected, because it's the Ubuntu movement and the one small town strategy that evolved out of this knowledge of the origins of humankind, which also led me to a deeper comprehension of the origins of money, where money came from, which is not what we are told by our history teachers and the other history books. It's a fascinating mesh of connected information, which on our education system gets presented in compartmentalized boxes. And those compartmentalized boxes in our education system have very rigid walls and very rigid boundaries. And you're not allowed to cross from one box to the other. Otherwise, you're a maverick and you're a jack of all trades. Well, nature doesn't work like that, does it, George?
Not at all. Are there many ancient gold caves, gold mining caves around South Africa?
Oh, this is the biggest thing. So let me go back to Adam's calendar and the significance of where it is positioned.
Okay.
There's no doubt in my mind right now that what has been referred to as the Barberton Crater, which is one of the most amazing geological sites, it's a giant crater, impact crater, that goes back to 3.2 billion years, and that therefore it attracts so much attention from the geologists around the world. But it's very obvious now that the Barberton Crater became most likely the primary gold excavation or gold mining site of the Anunnaki here in Southern Africa, or the Abzu, as Sitchin calls it. And so, that is mind-boggling. That's quite new information, because I've been leading up to this. I didn't want to just be blunt and blatant about it until I had enough support, evidence, and about 3 years or so, there's been more and more evidence coming out that I've been able to find or discover. I believe that the Barberton Impact Crater, which is right on the edge of Adam's Calendar, overlooks this huge crater. It's about 20 kilometers across, so it's a very large site. I believe that originally it was much smaller than it is now, and that entire crater was mined for gold by the Anunnaki. It is a reasonably well-known phenomenon that meteor impact sites push gold and other minerals to the surface. And somehow there's some sort of a reaction that happens during the impact process that brings the gold to the surface and pushes it to the rim of the impact, and often to the actual crater itself. And for that reason, I believe that the Anunnaki were mining that impact crater, because there was so much gold there, and there still is so much gold there, that for probably 300 or close to 300,000 years, that site was mined for gold.
Gosh, I wonder how much gold they took out of the planet, Michael.
Oh, my God. But that is why, and this is now you have to start connecting the dots here, George. This is why Adam's calendar is right there on the edge. Because now that the science, okay, and I'm speaking from a scientific perspective, this is not I think it is, I know it is a machine, because we've done the measurements, the electronic measurements. At Adam's calendar and many of the stone circles. There's no question. I think it is. It feels like it is. We know. We've got the electronic measurements that tell us this is a very powerful energy-generating machine.
Hold on for a second, Michael. We're at the top of the hour break. We'll come back for more. If it's a machine, tell us about the rest of the components, what they might have been, and where they are. We'll be back.